Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home, and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at ipvanish.com/audio.
This podcast is sponsored by IQBar.
I've got good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Most protein bars are packed with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients. The good news? There's a better option. I'm Will, and I created IQBar Plant Protein Bars to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel. IQ bars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. And right now, you can get 20% off all IQ bar products, plus free shipping. Try our delicious IQ bar sampler pack with 7 plant protein bars, 4 hydration mixes, and 4 enhanced coffee sticks. Clean ingredients, amazing taste, and you'll love how you feel. Refuel smarter, hydrate harder, caffeinate larger with IQ bar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20.
You know, there was that review that was left where it was like, I'm only here for Ellen. I don't care about Joey being gay and that butt stuff. I spent a long time in the closet, and now I'm just like, look at me, I'm out the closet, and I'm here to destroy people's podcasting dreams that cannot spell fitness correctly.
You ready, honey? Oh, you kept going. We're here. Thank you for coming to me and Rabia's live show the other day.
Ellen, it was so good. I was riveted. I'm sorry for yelling at the end and being like, wait, I have questions.
You guys, Rabia and I did our live show with Daisy Egan in New York. We covered the life and death of Whitney Houston. If you missed it, I think the live stream still might be available by the time this airs. I have no idea. You all, Joey is not kidding. He was acting like I opened the floor for questions. I was like, are there any questions? Joey was like, I have them, which I was fine with. We were just on a time constraint in that room. Trust and believe, I would have locked the doors and hunkered down till daylight to talk about this.
What kind of time restraint? How much time did you have? Like 75 minutes?
Yeah. And they were like,
no,
you are out, because there was another show after us, which we never do when you and I do shows, because they know we're going to stay and kiss and hug every last person.
Right.
And this venue happened to have another show. I would have stayed for questions all night, but it really meant a lot that you were there. We had a lot of our Kinky Boots friends there. It was just really great.
I was also just really proud of you. On our show, we get to be silly, we get to be clowns and goofy, and with Robbie and Ellen Solve the Case, you are very smart, and when you research something, you are relentless. You are a monster, and it just shows like a different side of you, and also it just reminds me of like how passionate you are about these cases and how much you care and invested you are, and
no.
I just sat there like a proud friend watching you and Rabia, and Daisy's face is alone.
She's the best guest. And Daisy is one of those people, it's like you and me. Like, I know if, when we get on stage, when we sit to record, it's going to be great because there's so much trust. It's the same with Daisy. Did you know Daisy and I also have a podcast?
No.
Yeah, but thank you for coming. I hope whoever saw it really enjoyed it. It was very close to my heart. This is a case I have wanted to do since day one. Every time someone came to the show, I was like, how about Whitney Houston? And I'm actually so glad nobody chose it, because doing it for the live show, so much better, so much more of an impact. I could spend so much more time on it. So it all worked out perfectly.
So much information about Whitney Houston's life and the scandal surrounding it. And now you've put all of our lives in danger. So how does that feel?
I'm really excited. Let's jump into the episode, really on an upswing. We're still on Playboy Murders, and y'all, you need to watch this show. It's very well done. Some of the information is repetitive, but I don't mind, because we sort of say the same thing at the top of our show, too. You never know when it's someone's first episode. Season 2, Episode 6, Dance to Death.
Paula wanted to be in Playboy. We've taken her away and got her out of Detroit.
The 50th anniversary Playmate was presented as being like a very special Playmate.
It doesn't matter if you pose nude in Playboy. That doesn't give somebody access or the right.
But it's really important as a woman going out to really be on your guard. You know, there's people trying to slip things into your drinks. There's people trying to grab you as you walk across the room.
You never know who you're surrounded by. It can be really scary.
It's one of the most heinous cases that I've ever worked. This is an animal out there that did this.
Well, we are in Detroit in 2003. Now, let me tell you, 2003 was a great year for music. And the top three songs of that year were all bops, regardless if one of them is a monster. It was before we knew he was a monster. Or maybe we did know and we just ignored it. I don't remember. Any guesses? And here's a hint. They're all hip hop and R&B. Let's start from 3-1.
Britney Spears was in there somewhere.
Britney Spears is not hip hop or R&B.
Yeah, she's pop, isn't she? Okay, I hear what I want to hear. And I heard Britney Spears.
But can't you say?
Well, hit us with number 3.
Let's get it on till the early morning, girl. It's all good, just turn me on. Come on, get busy. Just say that booty nonstop when the beat drop. Just keep swinging it.
I never knew a single word what that man was saying.
No clue.
Take the lead about a dog and us and get a hob and hob. I'm gonna ride a horse.
I took myself to the Trader Joe's. I had to get some food. I had some frozen food. I got the cauliflower rigatoni.
They just restocked the cauliflower gnocchi. It tastes so good. Well, turn me on. Something like that. Anyway, what a bop. Number 2, a little more laid back. What do you think it is?
Usher.
No, great guess though. Ready? Hit it!
So baby, give me that. Let me get that. Running her hands through my fro. Bouncing on 24s. Why they say I'm ready? It's the remix to Ignition. Hot and fresh out the kitchen.
You don't know this song?
I do, but it's not like in the front of my gray matter. Is that R. Kelly?
It's R. Kelly, and he wanted us all to get that toot toot and that beep beep. You know what I'm saying?
I think I blocked everything R. Kelly out of my mind when he wrote that whole come out of the closet thing, and then everything indeed did come out of the closet about what a monster he is.
A true monster. And then the number 1, the minute you hear it, you're gonna be like, right, that makes sense. Hit it!
Go, go, go.
Go, Ellen. It's your birthday.
Are those the hip-hop charts? Because you mean to tell me there was no Christina Aguilera, there was no Britney Spears? I find that very hard to believe.
Those are the top 3 songs of the year, and you'll never believe what was number 4, and I'm shocked, because you'd think that it would be number 1, because it is basically her biggest hit. It's Beyonce. What do you think Beyonce's number 1 hit is? And don't say Single Ladies.
Ring the alarm too soon. I don't know.
Crazy in Love.
Wow.
Listen, all those songs had us grinding in the club and getting crunk. Yes, I said crunk as I simultaneously am chillaxing home skillet, zipping on some scissors.
Do you know what is really interesting? Number 8 is Miss You by Aaliyah, and the connection between Aaliyah and Beyonce in Jay-Z has just come to my attention. We'll talk about that another time.
You are going to get us murdered.
I know, but you know what? We're on the Patreon. It's fine. Let's keep going. We're in Detroit. I don't know much about Detroit, but it has tried and failed to house the Summer Olympic Games 9 times.
9 times.
9 times.
9 times.
Whoa.
Detroit, are you okay? That's a lot of rejection. Detroit's like, can we do it now? What about 1972? Can you imagine getting rejected that many times? I mean, I don't know much about Detroit, but like, can it be that bad that the Olympic Games is like, now, now, now?
Detroit is Gretchen Wieners, and the Olympics is Regina George, and they're like, quit trying to make the Olympics happen. It's never going to happen.
Poor Detroit.
Pollock was this very dainty, sweet girl. She had a little dog that she loved. She always took care of her family.
We hear about a woman named Paula Sladowski. Through her good friend Christopher Boyoy, they did not tell us how to say his last name, and it is literally Boyoyagen.
I think it's Boyoy again.
It's Boyoyoy. Oy, oy, oy. Please welcome to the stage Christopher Boyoyoy.
I'm so glad Mel Brooks dropped by our podcast. Oy, oy, oy.
May the Schwartz be with you.
Oh, Spaceballs. I'm sure it's problematic.
Okay, our ADHD is really bad.
Sorry.
Christopher says these two met, became friends, and they like to hit the club, but only on under 21 nights, because they were under 21.
Did you have places like that where you grew up?
There was one in New Orleans, and I never went because it was in an area of New Orleans that I did not care to visit.
So my girlfriend girlfriends and I went to this place called Club X. We had fake IDs that made us 18 when we were like 16 and 17 to go to Club X. All we wanted to do was dance. We weren't drinking. We were nerds, but like hot nerds that wore like crap taps.
Yeah.
All we wanted to do was go and dance and kiss boys, Club X. And we would get so nervous. We had a fake ID that made us 18.
I love that. So you were swing dancing to the Anderson Sisters in the 1940s? That's so great. Why do I keep making age jokes with you? We are the same age.
I feel like you think it's vintage and it's just an old joke. It's just a tired joke. That is like the B. Arthur of jokes. Just like okay. Old and tired. And then it makes me think that like you feel some kind of way. I can't help it that I'm prettier than you.
You can't and you shouldn't. And so Christopher tells us that Paula was the life of the party and it didn't hurt that she looked like a movie star. And then he tells us a story that I don't entirely believe.
We were coming back home from the Electronic Music Festival and we're in her Mustang, vertical top down, and she's doing about 90, 95 miles an hour. And I look behind us and I'm like, Paula, there's a state trooper behind you. And the state trooper just pulls up next to her, gets on the loudspeaker and goes, "You're hot."
I am so glad you said that because in my notes, I wrote that and I just wrote, did that really happen? That sounds like a story my dad would have told, like never let the truth get in the way of a good story. That didn't happen. We meet a man named Robert Lent.
Not a real name.
That man's name is Robert. We're not doing this. I'm not doing this today. Stop trying to make Robert happen.
Yeah.
Stop it. That's not your name.
It's very much giving Duarte Felice.
But he's here and he owns a modeling agency in Detroit. And he met Paula around 2000 when she was auditioning to be a model. And he says she had beautiful eyes. She really did.
Yeah.
She had striking, beautiful eyes. I have such an affinity for blue eyes. Like sometimes in pictures, your eyes just suck the soul right out of me, mostly because you're Beelzebub, but also because you have beautiful eyes. I love the combination of dark hair and light eyes. We're going to find out later that she went blonde, but I love that combination. I just think it's so beautiful. But you have gray hair and light eyes, as the rest of the world is about to catch up to in about 7 to 10 business days.
Y'all, I am entering my silver daddy era. Watch out, Anderson Cooper. I'm coming for your gig. Robert, whatever the fuck that stupid name is, tells us that Paula was not one of those rail thin runway girls or like the Abercrombie and Fitch All-American girl. She had curves. And I was like, she was a real woman?
Right.
Is that what you're saying?
Exactly.
Paula worked a lot of auto shows. Basically, they like to have sexy, big-tittied women in front of a Mustang. Okay, let's be real.
I have never understood that. You know, my disgusting dad used to go to car shows. I just don't understand the model next to the car. Like, are they saying, if you buy this car, you're going to get this big-tittied broad with frosted tips? I don't get it because the only man that could afford such a car that is so expensive is like a little bald man named Franklin that has never seen a real-life titty since the 8th grade when he played Truth or Dare.
When he Googled titties.
Titties. I just don't understand the car show woman thing. It was a huge thing in the aughts. Maybe it still happens. I don't know.
What did you think? They were going to have your Nona next to a Mustang being like, try this car.
It's a very safe. You can put the leftovers on the passenger seat. Have they no move? Have they stay right there? All wheel drive.
This is a Mustang. We love them. My accent is really spanning the globe right now.
I didn't know my grandmother was Spanish. Adorable. My grandmother would have fucking loved you. Aww. I'm not kidding. My grandmother was hilarious. Like, she actually genuinely was hilarious. Like, she was sneaky hilarious.
Yeah.
Oh, man, she would have loved you. Thanks for killing my grandmother. I'm sure you had a hand in it.
Well, you killed my aunt, so there's that.
Did you listen to I Think Not this week? Yeah, they just keep blaming each other for their family style.
But all it's more swimsuit, kind of lingerie look. So booking her was a little bit more of a challenge in Detroit because we're Midwest. We're not a swimwear crowd. That was all being done pretty much on the West Coast. We're not actively into the magazines that displayed the very sexy, the prototype for that was the Playboy Mansion in LA.
So now Paula told Robert, still not a real name, that she wanted to pose for Playboy. And he was like, girl, you have to go to California and go to those parties. I can't help you here in Detroit.
We don't do that kind of thing in the Midwest. We like our women more wholesome, less Playboy, more pilgrim. I would honestly make a killing in Detroit. Who wants to see my pilgrim dress? I have boobies under here. You just have to get to them.
Jesus.
But it's true. Even though it was a big city, they were still conservative in the Midwest, okay? Robert, I don't want to see those Tetons out on display, okay? There's coffee and birds. There's no coffee and boobies out here.
We don't do that here. That's why we Lutherans use grape Kool-Aid for the blood of Christ.
Joey, I literally was about to say that. Sometimes I think we're not okay.
Sometimes? A 19-year-old Paula moves to Los Angeles in 2003, right around the time that Playboy was searching for their 50th anniversary playmate. And she quickly got swept up in the scene. She went blonde. She got hair extensions. She got a boob job. And you know what? There's nothing wrong with that. It was just a far cry from who she was before. And the difference is stark. She looks like a completely different person.
She really does. Also, Holly talks about how Hollywood in LA really focuses on youth and staying young. Holly was like, I was 19 and they were telling me I was about to be over the hill. Do whatever you want. I am white knuckling old age. I'm like, what's in that cream? Snail goop? Give it to me. What's in that thing? Poison? It's going to make me look young? Give it to me. What's in that? The tears of an infant baby? Give it to me. I don't care. I am white knuckling this shit. We are holding on. You can get your inspiration from any person, any source that you want, but I'm going to get my inspiration from Dolly Parton.
I'll look as young as my plastic surgeons will allow me.
Queen Dolly, thank you.
Listen, no one is going to convince me that Dolly Parton does not sleep in formaldehyde every night to preserve herself, okay?
You know what? She comes by it honestly, and I love that about her.
So do I. Also, what do I know? I think Honey Bunches of Oats with Almonds is a highfalutin dessert. So there you go.
Going into the new millennium, being a magazine featuring nude women is no longer the dominant form of that kind of entertainment. So Playboy had a lot of adjusting to do. They'd been getting into the home video arena and the online arena. And by the time you got to 2003, it was the magazine's 50th anniversary.
Golden anniversary. And we're looking for a golden girl.
Hef felt like he needed to make a splash. And I don't just mean in his adult diapers. So there's a casting call. You'd fill out a form, filling out your stats and all of your information, most likely a Yahoo email address, which I still have.
Same.
And then you'd take some pictures.
We see some footage of these pictures. Some of them are topless. Some of them are in bikinis or whatever. But we see this interview footage. Joey, it is such a 2003 flashback. Honey, we are talking graphic tees. We're talking unstructured dresses with mesh overlay. We're talking appliques, micro minis, low-rise jeans, bucket hat, Avril Lavigne in the Complicated video showing us that even if you are wearing a white tank top, you can show your straps as long as your bra is black. What a time to be alive, 2003. Weren't those videos crazy? Just seeing like their makeup and their hair and the thin eyebrows.
It is very much giving quintessential Paris Hilton, Nicole Richie on A Simple Life.
Yes.
Fully.
Oh, at that audition, they're snapping test photos of any women they sort of called back. And Paula was on this callback list. We actually see videos and pictures of her test shoot. She is very good at this.
She is not shy.
She is very comfortable laying on a pool table like she was born to lay naked on a pool table.
Yeah, she liked to be the center of attention. And again, there's nothing wrong with that. She was everything a Playboy centerfold should be. The thing is she's living her best life. She is what Nelly Furtado described when she sang... Fucking great song. And so the thing is that all of the finalists, their test shoots, their test videos, they were all being put on video, a home video to be sold for Playboy.
Honey, if there's one thing Hef is going to do, he's going to monetize the fuck out of the fuck of everything. He's like, auditions? Great. Test shoots? Sell them. We got women willing to sign away their titties? Optimize it. I'm sure she saw maybe like 200 or 300 bucks. They're like, here, we'll give you some money for your titties.
But also like, Paula's no dummy. She knows that being associated with the Playboy brand is a great thing for her brand. Former Playmate Pauline Shannon says,
I felt good and I felt strong and I felt confident. They've got people doing your nails and sending you to salons in Beverly Hills doing your hair. And all of a sudden, you're swept up in a dream world of Playboy.
You are everything that Missy Elliott described when she said,
you're a fly gal, get your nails done, get a pedicure, get your hair did.
Listen, if it's worth it, let me work it.
I love that song. If we could work that song into every 3 to 4 episodes on a rotation, I would be really happy. Here's the thing. Playboy has perfected this dance of the shoot. It serves them to really pump the women up and make them feel beautiful, make them feel confident and sexy, because they're just going to get a better shoot out of it. And they were awesome. Yes, you're gorgeous. Basically, Colleen Shannon is explaining doing a Playboy shoot is probably the most beautiful you will ever feel. And everyone is there for the same but different reasons. They're all looking to catapult their careers in whatever direction, whether that be modeling or acting or TV, whatever it is, it's a chance all of these women are willing to take, especially for this huge 50th anniversary Playmate shoot.
And Paula was very ambitious. The problem that we know now more than ever with the world of Playboy, there are some very dark people, not even on the fringe, in the center of this world, and their intentions are not always great, and you had to keep your guard up.
Mm-hmm.
Back to the 50th anniversary centerfold, the magazine narrows down their selections, and truthfully, there were thousands of women who applied. Paula was just one of them. And sadly, she was not selected as the winner. But Colleen Shannon, who again is here, was chosen as the winner, and it was a dream come true for her.
She said it was a lifelong dream. That just seems like an odd thing to say. I'm here for it. I'm here for Playboy. Just your lifelong dream? But here's the thing. Paula was on the search for the Playmate DVD or VHS. I don't know where we are in technology at this point. Home video. So she was like, well, I mean, I kind of like shot for Playboy because I'm in this home video, right?
And she was still determined to become a centerfold. That could happen for her.
Oh, absolutely. It feels like in learning from this show, once you're in some way, whether it's like working at the restaurants or not quite getting the centerfold, you kind of stay in the family. They keep an eye on you. And I think at this point, all these women know that staying within the franchise is a good move if you want to be in Playboy.
Paula was still in her early 20s. She wanted to move back to Detroit, but she still was interested in pursuing jobs in the modeling industry.
After Paula was in Playboy, I didn't get to book her a ton. Back in the day, Detroit had a very conservative client base, and if they find out that you're a Playmate model, then they would cancel you.
So there was a huge question for Paula. What's next for me? That is when she decided to become an exotic dancer. I think that that's very smart.
Yeah, she was making a ton of money. Living in LA, trying to be a model, you have to be going on go-sees all day long. She was really in it for the money. I know a lot of women who have done that, and good on you. But here's the thing. She was billing herself as a Playboy model, and that sort of made her stand out. You know, she would project the Playboy bunny on the screens while she dances. Even though exotic dancing wasn't going to bring her fame, it was certainly going to bring her money. But here's the thing. Hef kind of got word that she was using the Playboy name and stuff for her stripping. But she was like, I technically worked for Playboy. You monetized my likeness. So I can say that I modeled for Playboy. And Hef's like, you got me there. Yeah.
Also, it's smart because she did move back to Detroit. If you think of a market like Detroit, they don't have a ton of access to Playboy models. So it was very smart of her to go to this city and be like, yep, I'm a Playboy model and I'm stripping here in Detroit. It made her a lot of money. She used that Playboy credit to her advantage. And ain't y'all ever seen Gypsy? It's like Mazeppa said.
No,
not that part. The other part, the theme.
Kid, you gotta get a gimmick if you wanna get ahead.
Exactly. And being featured by Playboy in one of their home movies, it's a great gimmick.
See, bringing up Gypsy, I thought you were gonna bring up,
if you wanna bump it with a trumpet.
The lesson I actually walked away with from that song.
Really? To bump it with a trumpet?
I mean, if you're going to bump it with any instrument, I feel like a trumpet would be the best one.
You heard it here first. New merch.
Paula liked to be able to purchase nice things, and she was making money as an exotic dancer. She always paid her way, and she always had nice clothes, nice car for a 21-year-old to be driving around in a convertible Mustang.
Because she loved a muscle car like Nona.
My Nona is looking down and be like, I don't talk like this.
Also, Paula was a party girl. According to her friend Christopher, she liked to use drugs and liked to drink. Didn't we all do that in our 20s?
I didn't do drugs.
Okay, great. Didn't I do that in my 20s?
You also flat ironed your hair. I have a very embarrassing picture if you didn't join us on our first live show. Remind me to post it. Thank you. Carry on.
You're a monster. Again, though, in this world of dancing, there is a dark underbelly. You know, you're contending with a lot of gross men with a lot of money who have not so great intentions. She often got groped, and also she had some rocky relationships.
She was in and out of some relationships that had some DV. Then she met Kevin Klim. He was in real estate in Detroit. And David Wasser is here, and he's a private investigator, and we're going to find out in a minute why he is here. But he's going to take us to New Year's Eve 2009. Paula and Kevin flew into Miami from Michigan because they wanted to go down there for New Year. They were going to go to the Lady Gaga concert, and then they went clubbing. I have just never been into that clubbing scene, that Miami, New York, your night starts at midnight. I just have always been like, it's too loud in here. I just never was born with that chip.
This music, this Darude Sandstorm, it's giving me an ear infection. And I've already had 55 of those. I can't afford another one. In my 20s, I did all that. It's not a world I care to revisit. I did the after hours clubs. I did all that where you walk outside and it's broad daylight and you see people going to work. It is the worst feeling.
Joey, when I worked on cruise ships, we would port in New York on some days. The cruise ship comes in on 11th, right? You cross town to get to wherever you're going to spend the day. And we would get off the cruise ship at like 9, 10 in the morning. And all those clubs along 10th, I was like, where are these people coming from? They were coming out of the club. I had never seen anything like that. I had never lived in New York yet. I'm like, you guys are just ending your night at 10 a.m. It was so foreign to me. I looked at them like I was in the zoo. I'm like, oh my goodness.
Because you have no idea what time it is in there unless you're looking at your razor. And also you're either high or you've been drinking. And
sure.
Then it's the reason that they don't have windows in casinos, because you truly lose track of time.
Also, church.
Paula was, I would say, Kevin's meal ticket. I don't think he was making a lot of money at that point in his life. And so he was pretty much rolling along with Paula.
All of her friends, including Christopher, is here, sort of got the feeling that he was sort of a leech and kind of used her for her money and her status. And also, if you're going to a club, men aren't getting in the same way women are.
No.
If you have a pretty woman on your arm, okay, you guys, all right, next two, men wait in line. Women do not. Women get VIP. Men do not. That is the only get that women have. And the only reason they have that is so that the gross, stupid men on the inside of the club buy those gorgeous women drinks. It's all part of the wheel of madness that is keeping women down. Don't get it twisted. All to say, Kevin was using Paula for a lot of things.
Now, it's at this point that private detective David tells us some new information. Certain areas of large cities are not safe at night.
Huh.
Wow. Tear out the front page. We learn all kinds of things here at ITN, like lock your doors, wear your seatbelts, and the streets aren't safe at night.
Yeah.
I'm shocked. You?
We are an educational podcast. I have said it many times.
But they also tell us that this area of Miami where all the clubs are, it's kind of sketchy. Now, most Miami clubs close at 5 a.m., but there are after-hours clubs, like Club Space, that didn't close until, wait for it, 2 p.m.
I don't even know what that means.
Now, the same PI who told us the streets aren't safe at night also tells us
it was a late night, early morning club where people did mollies.
I'm on mollies. I'm on acids. I'm on weeds. Plural, all of them. I took all of the mollies.
Listen, the kids are out here on the streets doing the cocaines. They're doing all the drugs. They're doing the cocaines. They're doing the MDMAs. They're doing the mushrooms. They're doing the mollies. It's out of control out here on these streets.
Hey, Ellen, good to see you.
Hey, a long time no see.
Oh my God, what are you on right now?
Mollies. You?
I'm on the mollies and the acids, and I'm thinking of smoking the weeds.
I drank a vodkas.
Now I'm just chewing on my ices. I drank my vodkas and I'm just eating the ices.
Did you say ISIS?
No, not the terrorist group. The ices in my drink.
I thought you said ISIS, like the terrorist group.
Can you not bring up terrorist groups when I'm on mollies and acids?
Sorry.
Good talks.
No, no, no. He's one of my gays. He's a gays. What? I gotta go.
Paula likes to keep the party going until very late. Now, during this weekend trip to Miami, friend Christopher got a call from a mutual friend saying the worst news.
Hey, put on the news right now. Something happened with Paula.
Kevin woke up that morning on the 3rd at 11:30 in the morning, and Paula wasn't back. He immediately calls the police and files a missing persons report. And the police are like, no, how long has she been gone? Since last night? Not long enough. Sorry, we can't get serious about a woman really ever, but mostly not for like 24, 48, 72. I don't know, however many hours we feel like telling you that day, that's how long we're going to take. So good luck with your project.
But I will give it to Kevin. Whatever our opinions are of him, he was like, I'm not sitting around and waiting. He immediately located private investigator David and said, I need you to find my girlfriend. She's missing.
Now, David knows this area very well. He has been in law enforcement. He just unfortunately pluralizes a lot of drugs.
Yep.
But he explains to us that Kevin sounded very desperate. And then David said, all right, let's go to the Miami police. And Kevin basically says, no, 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 no. I already went to the police. That's why I'm calling you. They won't help me. And David's like, I know a guy.
I got a guy.
Kevin was like, no, I tried all those guys. He's like, I got you. I know a guy. Turns out David did know a guy.
PI David sits down with his contact at the Miami Police Department and Kevin. Kevin explains what happened. They got to club space at 5:30 a.m. Sounds like my worst nightmare. I'm not yucking your yum. I just would like to be asleep. And they were partying hard, a lot of drinking. And Kevin says the minute we walked into that club, it was all eyes on Paula. She just had that thing.
And then Holly Madison says,
being a beautiful woman walking into a nightclub, there can be a lot of benefits. People want to buy you drinks. People want to let you into a VIP area. You know, you can get everything comped or for free.
Listen, Holly, I get it. Every time I walk into an IHOP, you should see how fucking fast they bring me as much raspberry syrup as I want.
Hot.
They like, red carpet. Oh my God, Ellen's here. You want raspberry syrup? I'm like, you guys. The VIP service, I get it.
You're hot and you're a celebrity. Get her that raspberry syrup.
Listen, I know people at IHOP, so...
So Kevin says he thought he saw a friend at the club and he left Paula for a bit to go find that person and say hello. When he comes back down, according to Kevin, he finds Paula surrounded by dudes who are all trying to shake their groove thing on her. Kevin is like, babe, it's time to go. It's late. We're fucked up. This is ridiculous. Let's go.
One thing about Paula, she was not going to be told what to do. She was feisty and she basically grabs her arm back and is like, no, I'm not leaving. She's not going to be told when or how to leave. So the bouncers immediately see this altercation and there's no questions, there's no answers, there's nothing. You see somebody fighting at a club, those bouncers are kicking you the fuck out. So it's 7:15 a.m. and they do just that. The bouncers go and kick Kevin out of the club.
And Paula did not leave with him. So Kevin says, at that point, I hopped in a cab and headed back to our hotel room in Miami Beach, leaving Paula at club space. Now he's thinking, I guess she's just going to keep her party going and I'll see her later. But she never comes back.
P.I. David and the detective from the police department went to club space in order to get the surveillance tapes, all the footage, everything that happened that night. But here's the thing. Club space, they don't care about security. They don't care about what's going on in the club. They care about their money.
The surveillance cameras in this particular club were aimed at the door and at the bar, at the cash register. So what they're really surveilling is their employees to make sure nobody's stealing and that they're doing the right thing. But what they're not looking at is the whole area of the club with their patrons.
So we see the surveillance footage and it is grainy as fuck.
So grainy.
We do see Kevin being escorted out. But here's what else we see. 10 minutes later, we see Paula being escorted out.
Now, Holly Madison comes in to tell us a piece of information that I'd never heard before. I've never been kicked out of a club. I've seen friends get kicked out of a club. She says that often if there's an altercation between two people who are together at a club, they will be removed separately and not at the same time. Why? I have no idea. Maybe if they think there's a fight going on, they don't want those two people to continue the fight.
You're telling us that they were separately and not together? Both of those things?
Would you like to be separate and not together on this podcast?
Okay, when I first heard that, I was like, that's crazy. So the only thing I'm thinking of is they're thinking if this guy is beating her up, we don't want that fight to continue outside on the street.
Right.
But then I'm like, if you're actually doing that, take her to the back, give her some water, sit with her, ask her questions. Don't put her out on the street at 7:15 a.m. by herself as well. I don't know if it was a good thing or a bad thing. It seemed like an irresponsible thing to me.
I agree.
Right?
A key piece of information here, Kevin had Paula's cell phone on him, so she has no way of contacting anyone. And on that grainy as fuck security footage inside the club, we see a man follow Paula out.
That's also very curious, because if they really were looking out for her best interests, they would say, what hotel are you staying at? Do you need us to call you a cab? Oh, you don't have your phone? Do you need to make a call? I feel like there's a part of this story we're missing.
Yes. Also, do you know this person who's following you outside? Who is this guy? Who is this to you?
All of the security cameras at Club Space were inside the club. So after Paula's left the club, no one can account for her movements.
And now, armed with this information, PI David and boyfriend Kevin are hitting the streets, passing out flyers, asking if anyone has seen Paula.
And as he should, private investigator David is like, let's call the jails, let's call the medical examiner, let's call the hospitals, every place a normal investigation would start. So Kevin does that. Kevin calls the medical examiner's office and they say, actually, we do have a deceased female here. Please come in and take a look. So he does. He goes to the medical examiner's office and they hand Kevin these earrings, and they were a little bit charred, burnt, badly burned, actually. They show him the earrings and he's like, that doesn't really ring a bell. They showed him a third earring and it was like a crystal hoop, also very badly burned. And he said, oh my God, that is definitely one of Paula's earrings.
So it turns out Paula's body had been found extremely burned in a dumpster in North Miami. Literally the worst news, the worst possible outcome.
She was so badly burned, unfortunately, they had to identify her with dental records. This is traumatizing. Sadly, this is no longer a missing persons case. They have to start investigating it as a homicide. Did you know that people in our like online forums make fun of the way I say homicide?
No.
I don't know what they say I say, because at this point, I don't even know what I said. But this is what PI David says.
It is no longer a missing persons case. It becomes a homicide.
I definitely don't say homicide, but I'm not sure what everyone is giving me notes on. Sorry, everyone. I'm just trying to lighten it. This is going to get dark. Obviously, the first person they have to question now that is a homicide, I don't know what I'm doing wrong, is Kevin, the boyfriend. Of course. And he goes in to answer any question that they have. He is so confident, so helpful. He's like, I don't even need a lawyer. Sit down and ask me anything.
And they do. For 12 hours.
That is pretty crazy.
That is wild. Now, what the police discover is that Kevin and Paula's relationship, it was not great. Kevin had been violent with her. He had broken her nose once. He had a history of documented domestic violence. And so, of course, the police zero in on him. But Kevin denies being involved. And the police don't have any evidence that he was involved. So they let him go. But they tell him, under no circumstances may you leave Miami.
And then Holly Madison says,
domestic violence, unfortunately, is a huge concern amongst playmates or women who are in the modeling industry.
I love you, Holly Madison. You're doing a great job on this show. But can we fix that sentence?
Domestic violence, unfortunately, is a huge concern amongst women.
That's the better sentence. It is a huge concern among all women. It doesn't matter if you're a model. Doesn't matter if you're in Playboy. Doesn't matter if you're pretty or you're tall or you're skinny or you have big boobs. It is just scary in general. I know what Holly meant. She's on the right side of history. I'm just saying.
Now, PI David says, I didn't know Kevin. Not at all. I needed more information. I wanted to go to his hotel room to take a look around and see if anything stood out to me. Any sign of a struggle, anything.
Well, because when he took on the case, he just was like, I'm helping this man find his girlfriend. Now the girlfriend is dead and he's like, oh, I want to be on the right side of history with this one.
He goes and takes a look at the hotel room and he doesn't find anything of consequence. In the meantime, he's giving all the information he has obtained to the North Miami police, including the footage from the club. And the fact that Paula was found 12 minutes north of the club, the North Miami police take the case because it's in their jurisdiction. Now, two things that help Kevin here is, one, he's not from Miami. He doesn't know the area, including the industrial area that Paula's body was found. Number two, he doesn't have a car. how could he have transported her body? So the cops are thinking, okay, maybe Kevin isn't involved.
Right. It doesn't really make sense. Furthermore, during the investigation, they found surveillance video from a gas station, and it clearly shows Kevin presenting a picture to the clerk of Paula asking if they had seen her. He was really looking for her. Also, here's the thing. Paula was found fairly quickly because the time they have her leaving the club to the time she was found deceased, it was only about 14 hours. And within that 14 hours, through surveillance and tracking Kevin's movements trying to find her, they're pretty sure they can clear Kevin. So it turns out you can be a disgusting asshole that hits women, but not be a murderer.
So Kevin is cleared and he returns to Detroit. I'm sure Kevin was beating himself up because he wished he waited around a bit after being kicked out of the club. But how was he to know that Paula would also be kicked out? And he probably thought she was just going to keep partying.
I get that. And you know what? When your judgment is impaired, you make bad decisions. We've all made decisions, even if we've come out of it okay, looking back and thinking, wow, I shouldn't have fucking done that. Of course he shouldn't have done that. Or he should have said, here's your phone, you're going to need it, or something. But when drugs and alcohol are involved, our decision-making skills are impaired. It's awful. It really is.
As part of their investigation, the police are naturally going to go back to the club. They want to interview potential witnesses. Did anyone see Paula leaving with anyone?
But who can remember what they were doing when they were on the mollies? All of those mollies. So many mollies.
So many mollies.
He also spoke to some street artists and vendors in that area. He found someone who did remember seeing someone fitting Paula's description walking away from the club with a black male, hand in hand. David puts this eyewitness in touch with the North Miami police. And based on this witness's description, they come up with a composite sketch. And I have to say, this is one of the better composite sketches I've ever seen. It actually looks like a human being.
Yeah, it really is. But here's the thing. Nobody knows who this guy is.
No.
There was sort of a narrative that it was a bouncer, but they interviewed all the bouncers. They had surveillance. It wasn't that guy. Now, the media is running with this whole Playboy model part of the story. And as we have learned throughout this series, Playboy doesn't want to get involved in anything that is dramatic, problematic, anything having to do with the press and the cops. They're going to distance themselves, especially because Hugh never really considered her to be a Playboy model. No statements were made by Hugh or anyone at Playboy.
Paula's family actually ended up employing PI David to continue working on solving this case. They wanted Paula's murderer found. Time passes and the police have no leads. But PI David basically says he didn't feel that the North Miami police were doing all they could to solve this crime, and he was determined to find out who did this.
Also, PI David says he really believes that the police wasted time harping on Kevin. They lost that precious first 48 hours. I mean, I get that. Hindsight is 20/20. This man did have domestic violence in his past. They had gotten in a fight. It's all very sad. But something else that was really upsetting that PI David pointed out was,
mind you, North Miami is a very poor city located in North Miami, Florida. And North Miami's quality of homicide investigations at that time was, I'm sorry to say, but below the standards, in my opinion, of anywhere in Dade County.
David's like, I don't understand why they just didn't leave it in the more capable hands of the Miami police.
Paula's sister Kelly was very much involved with helping PI David. They came up with a very detailed poster, including pictures of Paula, a picture of the composite sketch. There was a $15,000 reward offered, and they posted these all over the area where Paula's body was found in the hopes that someone saw something.
And they get a lead. They find what David thinks is a very credible witness, and he was reluctant to get involved, but he felt like he had really important information to share. He lived next to Club Space, and that night was walking his dog, and he saw a woman who matched Paula's description, noticed how beautiful she was, noticed what she was wearing, saw a truck driving the wrong way down a one-way street, and he saw Paula get into the car.
Also, I wouldn't consider 7:15 a.m. night. It was definitely in the morning.
Yeah, good call.
So the question is, was this someone that Paula met earlier in the club? Did she recognize this person and that's why she got in the truck? She was stranded. She needed a ride. She didn't know Miami. She was most likely intoxicated and just wanted to get home. She had no idea where her boyfriend was. She didn't have her cell phone. She had no way of getting in touch with him. It's very tragic. And the thought is that whoever did this had the intention of sexually assaulting her and did not want to leave a witness, which is why he killed her and burned her body. I just want to say, too, I'm not victim blaming. Like you said earlier, it's early morning. She didn't know anyone. We all take calculated risks in life. And if you're like, I am absolutely stranded and I'm going to take a chance with this guy who might be offering me a ride because what other options do I have? I'm going to have some faith in humanity that this person doesn't have horrible intentions. And unfortunately, this person did.
Mm-hmm.
And Paula's friend Christopher says,
I think the hard part for me was imagining her having to go through that.
I mean, she was alone. She was probably intoxicated, maybe under the influence of other drugs, somehow mentally impaired. Rabia and I talked about this with the Riley Strain case, the young man who went missing in Nashville, who was kicked out of a club. You know, I asked Rabia, I said, what kind of liability does a club have kicking an impaired person out, being like, good luck out there, sport, kid, lady? And it's just really scary. And Holly Madison tells us that it is unfortunately a cold case. So then Amber Campisi, one of the talking heads and former Playboy playmates in this episode, says,
it doesn't matter what you wear as a woman, how you carry yourself in someone's perceived notion. It doesn't matter if you pose nude in Playboy. That doesn't give somebody access or the right. There shouldn't be a why. Why were they attracted to this person? That's not a question. Why did it happen is the question. What happened to Paula should never happen to anyone.
We hear this all the time. The victim blaming, the what was she wearing, the idea that women somehow attract the attention of sexual predators because of what they wear, and that men who would never, ever think of engaging in any kind of predatory behavior, they are just simply unable to control their sexual desires when they are confronted by women who are exposing their flesh. Obviously, anybody listening to this right now would think that is preposterous, but it's not. That narrative is not unique. I looked this up because sometimes numbers are just so much more daunting than emotions, because I have plenty of those. Do you know 0.7? That's not even 1%. 0.7% of rapes and attempted rapes end with a felony conviction for the perpetrator.
Wow.
Basically, assaults, rapes, sexual assaults on women are essentially legal in our country. And I also found this quote from a man named Officer Michael Saguenti. He actually said out loud, women should avoid dressing like sluts in order to not be victims.
That man really said the quiet part out loud.
And anybody listening to us, it's crazy, but it's not. That is the way people think. If she drank less, if she went home earlier, if she didn't put her drink down, women who don't dress appropriately, who wear short skirts, you know, Paula was wearing a very short mini dress or whatever. If they don't work in the sex work industry, if they're not exotic dancers, women who drink, women who do drugs, it sounds crazy, you all, but people actually say this shit.
Yeah.
They believe this. That's why there are so many women who are sex workers, who are suffering from substance use disorders, and they're just never investigated. And here's what, Paula's case? Holly is right. It is still a cold case after all of these years.
That sort of victim blaming, always discussing someone's way of dressing or the life they chose to live, it is an old trope that needs to be put to bed.
Mm-hmm.
If you have any information about this case, you are asked to call the Miami-Dade Crime Stoppers at 305-471-8477. It is a tragic ending, and regardless of the way you feel you want to dress or the way you want to live, everyone deserves to move through the world with safety and comfort in the decisions that they make or how they want to dress or how they want to live. It's no one's business. That does not mean that you should be a target because you decide to wear a mini dress on New Year's Eve weekend to a club.
Unfortunately, these stories will continue until men view women as human beings and not as property and not as trash and not as victims. And we'll see when that day comes. Say something funny.
Well, I will say that this story of clubbing and after hours did bring me back to my 20s. And I have given up the mollies and the acids and the weeds for pajamas, podcasts, and my butt stuffs. Sorry, fitness mom with one S.
She's not listening. Not until you grow up, baby. You better grow up.
Acids. Ices.
Quaaludes.
Okay, now you've gone too far back in the DeLorean.
Thank you so much, Down Bitch Society. We love you so much. Thank you for being here. We will see you in Raleigh tonight. When you're listening to this, we're going to see you tonight.
Are we really?
Yeah, we're going to see him tonight, baby.
Good luck to us all.
Don't forget, there are tickets available for our other cities. Just go to www.ithinknotpod.com. Click the See Us Live link. Come and see us before you can't see this tour anymore. I love you, Joey.
I love you too, Yellow Martian. I love you, DBs.
Love you down, bitches. Bye.
Bye. I'm on the mollies. Also, y'all, you may periodically hear thunder on this episode because the thunderstorm that's happening here in Dallas is not to be fucked with.
There's been a fire.
We've got to pull it together. Why did it sound like you were going to go bitty bong?
I don't know. Let's jump in. Season 2, Episode 6, Death to Dance.
Dance to Death.
It's literally written that way. And I read it. Like, what is wrong with my eyes? You know what's so funny is that you do that too, but you catch me so well. No, you do. And I appreciate it because you're actually better at catching me, which it just means you're obsessed with me.